Welcome to the Gay Buddhist Forum, where teachers from all schools of Buddhism offer their perspectives on the Dharma and its application in modern times, especially for LGBTQI audiences. These talks are offered freely to the world and made possible by appreciative listeners. If you would like to support our efforts to share the Dharma with underserved audiences, please visit gaybuddhist.org. There you can donate, find a list of upcoming speakers, or enjoy many hundreds of these recorded talks dating back to 1996.
Suvana Prabha, or Suvana is the short version.
Today we are fortunate to have one of our beloved regulars, Siddhartha Kalman, and she was ordained in 2001 into the Western Buddhist Order, is director of the San Francisco Buddhist Center, and a writer. She teaches classes and retreats at the San Francisco Buddhist Center, workplace wellness and mindfulness-based stress reduction in local businesses, and occasional meditation classes at the San Francisco County Jail. Her humorous advice column, Ask Auntie Savannah, was featured in Dharma Life, a British Buddhist magazine. Other writings have appeared in What Book? Buddhist Poems from Beat to Hip-Hop, published in 98, and Challenging Times, Stories of Buddhist Practice When Things Get Tough, put out in 2007. Welcome.
Thank you. Quite a few of those things I was noticing aren't true anymore. and you'll find out why in a second. It occurred to me during the meditation that I think it's been a couple years since I've been here, but I don't know, I definitely see some familiar faces. It's nice to see you all, actually. You're a lovely group of men to come and talk to. And I think the last time I was here, I talked about patience. So I've had quite a lot of opportunity in my life to work with that since then. But I wanted to start out reading a little paragraph by a poet called John O'Donohue, who you might have heard of. He says, "Eventually, even the strangest things become absorbed into the routine of the daily mind, with its steady geographies of endurance, anxiety, and contentment. Only seldom does the haze lift, and we glimpse for a second the amazing plenitude of being here. Only seldom does the haze lift and we glimpse for a second the amazing plenitude of being here. Sometimes, unfortunately, it is suffering or threat that awakens us. It could happen one evening, you are busy with many things, netted into your role, and the phone rings. Someone you love is suddenly in the grip of an illness that could end their life within hours. It only takes a few seconds to receive that news. Yet, when you put the phone down, you are already standing in a different world. So, I have been standing in a different world since I last saw you. I had a Skype call with one of my sisters lives in Singapore, and I was talking to her last night. And she seems to really continue to be astonished that I'm not seeming to suffer more than I am. And in some ways I am suffering less, and I actually have less anxiety than I did before I was diagnosed with cancer, which is the sort of punchline of sorts in January. And advanced stage cancer, staging was up to stage 4B. And once I was talking to a social worker, and I told her that I wasn't particularly afraid of dying, or I just didn't feel that aware of being afraid of dying, but I had more fear around sort of quality of life questions and whether I would be disabled in certain ways, either by the cancer or by the treatment. And she said something interesting. She said that spiritual people or people who pray or meditate, she said pretty much all of them spoke about it as I was speaking about it. But she said a lot of other people that she speaks to were even unable to utter the word death. They just simply could not think about it, talk about it, anything. I don't know. I felt like I had a great deal of compassion toward those people because that situation sounds extremely painful to me, to have this sort of thing looming that you can't talk about. So I thought what I would do today is just say a little bit about how this journey has been for me, and just offer a few reflections. And I would also save a bit of time at the end to hear what any of you have to say on the subject. I'm sure there's also a great deal of wisdom in this room. Let's see, what else we got here? So it's funny, I'm just not quite sure which angle to take on this, but anyway. Just to briefly summarize, so in January, a malignant tumor was discovered just below my cervix, and there were many scans and appointments and things that happened after that, so I had tumor, and it was moving into my bladder, and I also had in my bones, in my hips, so basically a lot of cancer going on in my pelvis. And a couple of weeks after I found out, I hopped on my bicycle to go somewhere and just screeched in pain because my sit bones were really painful, and I started not being able to sit in normal chairs. And I stopped being able to sit as I'm sitting now, which was possibly the most disturbing of all. Has anybody seen that movie 50-50? So the guy in there, it's quite a good movie, the guy in there is given a 50-50 chance that all this treatment that he is getting is going to work. And the type of cancer that I got is so rare that there's no information about it. So it was just a I was just told by many very, very nice people, just wait and see. We'll do the treatment and we'll just see what happens. And I'd be like, well, what are the odds that, say, you know, in 5 years I'm going to be alive? And they'd just be like, I don't know. I think one guy actually did say 50%, but it sounded like a completely random sort of guess, so I didn't take that much stock in it. And yeah, I was 48 at the time. I had had virtually no health problems in my life. Sleep really well, healthy digestion, all that stuff. So, when I'm talking about it, this feels like kind of a heavy topic. It would be a great disservice to everybody if I didn't say that it has had many, many benefits for me. At some point, I remember I was walking with my friend, and she was going to a lot of appointments and stuff. For a while, I had appointments every day or twice a day, and I was kind of walking along with her, and I was thinking, do I feel happier since I got diagnosed with cancer? And I was kind of like, it kind of seems like I do. And she thought that was really weird, as do I. But I did want to talk about some of the benefits. Just because it's something that happened, and I have become much more loving since this happened, and I have experienced a lot of people expressing their love for me. I suspect sometimes it might be because they wonder if it's the last chance they're going to get. But whatever the reason is, it's lovely. I really enjoy my time with people. I feel like I'm a lot less stressed out than practically anybody around me. I feel like there's so much angst and stress and stuff that people are dealing with. Sometimes people don't want to tell me their problems because they feel like anything they could be going through is just silly compared to what I'm going through. And I always say, people are suffering and I'm tired of my story, so let's hear your story. And you know, sometimes it sounds terrible, you know, like somebody who's just worried about money all the time. Like, I don't know, I just... I feel like I have a bit more time for that, and just for other people. And also, just life. I enjoy my life. And I'm not suffering sort of drastically from the treatment I'm getting. I mean, I got a lot of issues that emerge. And by the way, everything that you see before you now is totally fake. There is nothing here that represents like a sort of real person. Takes a while to put together, too, I'll tell you.
Can we call you Mrs. Doubtfire?
And you know, a lot of people, I'm sure people in here have had cancer or have cancer, and maybe we'll get to hear about that later, or some of their trouble like that. Sometimes, you know, when people are trying to be supportive, they're, you know, they'll say like, oh, you know, it's like they talk about the fight. Like, you're going to fight this, you're going to kick ass on the cancer and all this stuff. And I've just never really thought of it that way, because I feel like it's my body and I don't want to fight my body. As the Buddha tried to teach, anything that happens, anything that we can describe about this room or any thought that we have or anything is arising out of myriad conditions, some of which we can be aware of and really understand and experience, and some of which we're just never going to have any idea. So I feel like that's what happened. I go through all kinds of stages with that, like this thing about what should be happening, what not should be happening. I mean, I think in a way this is very basic Buddhism, and for me that's kind of morphed into maybe it should be happening, but not right now. Because you know my doctors comment a lot, so I'm 49 now, and my doctors comment a lot that how young I am. I'm so young, I'm so young. So finally, I was talking to a doctor, and I said, "So when you say I'm young, do you mean that I'm not like 70? Is that what you mean by young?" And he said, "No, I mean you're not 85." So I was like, "Oh, okay." I don't know what that's about. So like, this isn't the right time for this to happen. Like, that's something I've kind of worked with a lot, or this shouldn't be happening. And I feel like I've mostly just said, okay. I don't know, my sister sometimes comments when I talk to her. I feel like I have pretty much completely accepted that this is my situation. There's nothing wrong with it from a certain point of view. It's just what's happening. And again, like I said, it's allowed me to... occupy my life in a way that I feel like I wasn't quite doing before. And I also feel like, if you have cancer or some other kind of debilitating illness and you're fighting it and you're thinking like, I can't die. Like, I'm not going to die. Dying is not an option. No. That just means, you know, I'm sure a lot of people think of that as a very positive thing, but I think it's just basically what you're saying is you have to live in fear of something that you have virtually no control over, and you have to pretend that what is real is not real, or what is a possibility is not a possibility. You have to act like you can absolutely control that. And, you know, I'm not even saying... Maybe that's useful for some people, just to say, I can't think of it that way. Because it's like, choose life. And we can choose life, but if life doesn't choose back, then... I mean, it's kind of like, it's up to life. Life gets to decide. So I feel like I have had to let go of my life in some way, which is sad in a way, but in a way it also feels kind of liberating, and it also feels like I also feel totally engaged with my life and with people. It's just that I feel like, you know, if at some point I need to just let it go, or when I need to let it go, I at least feel like I will be able to do that. But who knows what will really happen. So I've had two rounds of treatment. The first round was in January, February, March. And it was radiation every day and chemotherapy once a week. and I had metastases, so it went into my lungs, so I had kind of a break, and then I started chemotherapy again. But I've had scans and things and an exam. I had an exam last week, and so I got it confirmed. I've had it confirmed several times that all the cancer in my pelvis is completely gone. But then, so now the chemotherapy is where I have these little nodules in my lungs. So we'll see what happens with that. My biggest fear is not dying. My biggest fear is getting to a point where I keep having things cropping up here and there and having to deal with them, and then at some point having to just say that I want to stop treatment, and then like dealing with my family and stuff. Like, that's kind of like the eventuality that I hope doesn't happen, and it might not happen. I mean, I've responded very well to this round of treatment. I don't know. But it's very interesting, this whole idea about not knowing. Because I find that when I say that I don't know, there's like a leaning on one side or the other. So I can just be like, oh, I don't know what's going to happen. Nobody's given me any data. Here I am. I'm just going to see what happens. But I find, you know, on a given day or a given week or a given whatever, I'm kind of going, yeah, but it's never going to go away. Or, yeah, but I think it's fine. There's always this very subtle kind of trying to know what's going to happen. Which I think applies to possibly everybody. Like, we all think that we know what's going to happen. We're all have some idea of how long we think we're going to live, probably. Maybe a lot of us think we're going to die of old age or something else. Actually, that brings up another weird story that my friend was telling me yesterday, which was that her sister went to a doctor for, like, I can't remember if it was stomach pains or chest pains, and the doctor said, oh, you know, do you think it might be some kind of anxiety? And she said, well, I am kind of worried about dying of cancer. And then this is my kind of doctor, maybe not everybody's kind of doctor, but the doctor said, we're all going to die of cancer. She was like, wow, you're a real nurturer, aren't you? But anyway, so it just points to the fact of, you know, we don't know what's going to happen, but in a way, I mean, especially, you know, our lives are probably fairly stable. And it's like, well, yeah, I could die today, but odds seem pretty good. I've lived this long, and things seem pretty stable, and, you know, but we don't know, and we don't know any plans we make if we're going to be able to actually do them. And I think there's something that's really, yeah, there's something from, I think it's Padmasambhava who says, what is it? I do not know, I do not have, I do not understand. And I feel like there's really something in that for me, something that really, not like you go around bumbling around like you don't understand anything, more that just allowing possibility, just allowing this potential all the time, and allowing us to respond creatively to the actual moments that we have rather than what we imagine them to be or what we very deeply want them to be, because we want to continue and we expect to continue in some way, and we expect other people to continue. And I think most people sort of think of that situation as being tremendously sad. And there is, it is sad. It's also, or it can be, just a very, create a very beautiful, almost magical experience of what it means to be alive, how it feels to be alive. and really living that, which I don't profess to be doing, but I feel like I've got a little taste of that somewhere. I was on a retreat, no idea when it was, it might have been last summer, and we were doing this, it wasn't a silent retreat, we were doing this very strange exercise that would be very hard to explain, but anyway, there was a group of people sitting down, and a group of people standing up, and the standing up people would whisper something, their deepest wish, their heart's wish, to the person sitting down, and then they'd switch. So everybody who was standing whispered their heart's wish to everybody who was sitting down, and we switched. And other than it was confusing, and people kept getting lost, and some people heard the wishes twice, and besides all that, somebody said to me, love is literally everything. And I was just, well, actually, the first thing I thought was, well, my wish was really dumb compared to yours. But then after that, yeah, and I feel like that kind of just goes with my whole theme of during this time. So I have, on October 5th, I do my last round of this chemotherapy that I'm doing, and then it's just kind of see what happens after that. So this is, you know, that's been my year of pondering these things, and yeah, it really has been really wonderful in many ways. And I mean, it's funny, and I always think that when I say that, I got this, you know, it's like the angel and the devil on your shoulders, and I don't know which one is saying this, but one of them is saying, oh God, don't like be an optimistic American, you know, like everything's great, I've got cancer, I love this. So I don't think that's what I'm doing, but I, you know, I guess I've just been so surprised, personally, so surprised by the benefits that I have gotten in my life that I, you know, I maybe do tend to be a little bit emphatic about it, but, you know, there's also, well, why don't we just balance out the situation? Okay, so there's also, like, people telling you that if you eat turmeric, you will cure your cancer because that's what their friend did. And, you know, other things, drinking hydrogen peroxide and all kinds of stuff. Actually, people have kind of stopped doing that for some reason because I'm like, shut up. No. No, I'm like, really? That sounds great. And, you know, actually, that phase is kind of past. So, I mean, some, you know, obviously some things are difficult when I get into work. I can get into worrying about stuff, and I usually just say, okay, there was a great, Shantideva, the great sage, who I think I mentioned actually last time, I'm sure you all remember, when I was talking about patience, but he said something like, he said the most brilliant thing about worrying. He said, if there's a problem that can't be solved, then why should you worry about it? And if there's a problem that can be solved, then why should you worry about it? So mostly, and you know, you could tell yourself that and beat yourself up because you're worrying and you shouldn't, because Shantideva said not to, but I feel like most of the time I can do that and just, yeah, just go with what's happening and not worry about all that other stuff. Right, let's see if I have anything else on here. I mean, I think that'll probably do. Maybe I'll just end with a little bit from the Anguttara Nikaya, which says, I am sure to grow old. I cannot avoid aging. I am sure to become sick. I cannot avoid sickness. I am sure to die. I cannot avoid death. All things dear and beloved to me are subject to change and separation. And again, that might not seem relentlessly optimistic, but I think what's optimistic about it is really accepting that and just working with the actual conditions that we have, rather than ones where these things don't happen and things being driven by fear, rather than things being driven by wanting to know this, because this is a huge part, if not all, of the beauty of what we are given as human beings. Yeah. So I guess I will end my bit there. And close my laptop. Okay, let's go this direction, starting with you.
When your parents made me fake that your spirit is true in life.
Yeah.
And as a physician and also someone who's had cancer, I just want to make a couple of observations. Mm-hmm. That you will reflect. There was a study during the AIDS epidemic where people who were given a pinpoint date that they might die did much worse than people who were given an open window.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably attributed to the fact that when you have that open window, you have hope and you don't have that anxiety. Another, I think, very big part is that when you can let go of control, when you can let go of anxiety, you can open your heart to what's happening around you. And that allows you to enjoy things that you may not have seen because of the blinders that were there. And that's a really big part of making the most of your life and enjoying your life and enjoying your moments and being, I think, as real as you can be with the people around you and open to what they have to give you as well. And what you say really reflects that. And thank you for sharing.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for being so transparent and genuine on this. It's a great gift. So I find that most of my worries and concerns relate to the future. Saving enough money because, you know, I assume I'm going to live long. And taking good care of my health because I assume I'm going to live long.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, creating strong bonds and friendships because I want people around me because I'm going to live long. How would you say having a future effectively removed from the equation contributes to this sense of calm and peace and joy that you have related to us?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely it. If you don't know if there's going to, if it's very unclear if there's going to be a future, I mean, unless then the big worry is not having a future, and if that's a huge issue as well. So I suppose it could kind of go either way. And I've noticed that a lot with people. Putting aside money is a big thing, and what you're doing about your health and all that. And I think all those things, you know, we do have, all of us have a future. So in a way, it makes sense to do those things. I suppose there's something about, I guess to me, there's something about the light touch of, and besides, I hope there are better ways to do this than getting cancer.
Mm-hmm.
But somehow just having that awareness that, okay, I'm I'm preparing for old age in whatever way, and also I don't know if I'm going to get to old age. I don't know if my friends who I'm bonding with are going to get to old age. And somehow just having that more be a part of that reality. And also realizing that anxiety, I think in a way, I think being aware of anxiety is a really positive mindfulness practice. Because I do feel, like since I've kind of chilled out and said, oh, I might be dead in a while, you know, whatever. I feel so much anxiety from people. And it just, it seems so painful. So I guess just, and just in a way, like looking into that, what's that about? What is it that I feel like kind of has to happen? Or that I, what is the fear? And really looking into that fear. Yeah, something like that. Can you?
Well, first I wanted to thank you for your generosity and courage in coming and sharing this with us. And I'm strongly struck by it because I've gone through two of these so far without, you know, with okay consequences. 4.5 years ago, prostate cancer, which we decided eventually to do nothing, and now it's seemingly gone away. And 2 years ago with colon cancer, which was operated on, and 3 days ago I just got my second year CAT scan, and you know, seems okay. And my experiences with that are that it has, first of all, I make judgments about myself. Critical judgments. It's
like
increased
what?
My...
Like what kind of judgments?
Well, it's increased my generosity and my forgiveness and my gratitude, but not as much as I should have.
That's true of me, by the way, too. But, yeah.
And secondly, there are moments I'm walking outside and I say, wow, it's so beautiful, and just the trees and the flowers, and I'm really noticing it and I'm present, and then I go back to being mindless most of the time.
Yeah.
And another piece is the one you just talked about, which is anxiety. So I get, you know, 3 or 4 months checkups, and this goes back to 1983 with HIV checkups, and every time I go through this, you know, intense anxiety, and I think I shouldn't be doing that. It's wrong. I am going to die anyway, so what is this?
You shouldn't be having the anxiety.
Right.
Yeah, right.
And so I think what you said is what I've come to in my saner moments also. And also the other thing about anxiety that I think is true, and this was some of Buddhism, first of all, it's not wrong to have it, it's just what arises. But secondly, if you examine it, how does it feel in my body, what's going on in my mind, lo and behold, it generally disappears. And a third piece is that, at least for me, and I think this is pretty widespread, our anxiety level doesn't have much to do with the level of the threat. Saber-toothed tigers or a rash on my finger.
Same thing.
Same. And so it's encouraged me to do more practice. So I've also noticed that meditation is not one that I'm very, that I don't seem to be able to advance much on, but there's other kinds of ways of practicing. And the other thing is that I've become a volunteer at the Zen Hospice, which I've been thinking of for years, but finally I, you know, said, all right, I should do this. I did that 1.5 years ago, and I'm still there. And that's about, I want to come to terms with death in some way. I think it's desirable, or I should, probably more bullshit, to, you know, be able to just accept it. And then there's the annoying little thought, but what if I'm hit by an earthquake or a car, and you know, like that, and it'll have been, all this effort will have been useless. So those are some experiences.
Yeah, there's a bunch of interesting things in when you said it, what you said. I think One of them is, it's like when even wisdom or Buddhist practice or whatever you want to call it, then becomes the stick with which you beat yourself for being too anxious or whatever. And I think, yeah, and I think that's like a really great thing to bring into awareness as well. Because, and you know, and that arises, look at the conditions for that, like what kind of conditions give rise to that. And in a way, I do think there's a sense of, I mean, you know, you can kind of go wrong with this, but there is a sense of like, everything is fine the way it is. Or at least it makes sense that it arose in the way it is. It arose, and that applies to each of us and how we are and what's happening with our body and the way we think. All these conditions are coming together. And so we can, you know, try to be creative with conditions if we want to maybe have a bit less of that beating of ourselves and all that. But I mean, in general, like working at a hospice sounds like a great thing to do. I had a really, I'll just say this very briefly, a friend of mine takes care of a 91-year-old woman who's been in bed for 10 years, but she's just lovely, lovely woman, and she's super Catholic. She's from Belfast, and she prays for people. She is concerned with suffering, and when she knows somebody's suffering, she'll just pray and pray and pray for them. And this is somebody who can barely move, you know, and I just really, I mean, I could have gone to visit her and said, God, I am such a jerk. Like, I have no problems compared to this lady. What's the deal here? But I didn't do that. I thought, wow, I can walk around. I can totally walk around. I could walk for 2 miles. And what a blessing that is. So I think also, in a way, just being around people. I mean, we do, it's like, it's a form of conceit in Buddhism. We do compare ourselves to other people. So if we're around all these people running triathlons, you know, whatever, we're going to feel really sick and disabled. And if we're around just the range of people, because there is this huge range of ability and illness and sickness. A lot of times in this culture, I think we hide away maybe people who don't live up to the certain standards of youth and beauty. So you just end up feeling like a jerk all the time. But anyway, too many threads that I can't keep track of, but thank you. It's interesting what you said. Okay, you're next, and then these two. I'm not sure how much time we have, but yeah.
Hey, thank you for sharing your story with that. I'm glad I'm here and I was able to listen to you. When you just started your narration about what's happening to you, you said something that I connected to. As you say, you're not afraid of dying. I'm not afraid of dying either. I've been really close to that many times. However, I'm 41 years old. I just turned 41 a week ago. And during this time, I have seen so many people dying around me. I became friendless. They all died, including my husband 6 years ago. It was really dramatic to see him dying. He did not want to die. He wasn't ready to die, but he did. And that suddenly, that listened to him, like, I don't want to die, knowing and deep down that he's actually dying.
Yeah.
But if I were him, I'm ready to dispatch him. But why is it that you're not afraid of dying? I want to compare your thoughts with my thoughts and see if I can connect to that. Why are the reasons, and one or two reasons, that you can give us that you're not afraid of dying? I'm not either. I think just for
That's a very interesting question. I guess the first thing that comes to mind is that I don't... Apparently, people in this situation have a bucket list. Like, before I die, I must visit Sweden. You know, whatever. And there are places I would like to visit, and there are things I would like to do. But they don't seem that important. I guess I just feel like... death happens, and I've had a good life. And I don't have a choice. But you know, I do take very good care of myself also. But if that's what happens, then don't have a choice. And I also think, you know, life is hard. We got to deal with a lot of stuff all the time. Zoom, zoom, zoom. Death, I'm like, I'm done. You guys carry on. I might look disgusting when I die, but I don't care. I'm not going to see it. You guys are going to have to look at it. You know. Anyway, so that's kind of off the top of my head. But
thank you.
How about yours?
I think I have lived enough. I've seen enough. I've done enough. I have been loved immensely. I have loved being back, and I have loved my family. My family loves me. I can just study next hour, and I'm good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really am.
Thank you. Okay, there are two over here. Okay, you
good? Let's just, part of my journey around life has been to embrace grief and loss. And I felt like I came here saying I'm just going to volunteer as a support person with the AIDS epidemic. And the reason why I came was because I felt like I was fending off grief and loss. And that was so much a part of life that I couldn't allow myself to feel it fully and feel alive at the same time. So I just wondered what part that experience has played in this process of your illness.
Mm-hmm.
It was in the last line, I think, of that quote you read about the things that we love are going to leave.
Yeah.
We're going to leave.
Yeah.
And then there's that gap in between loving and leaving.
Yeah. I haven't experienced a lot of death of other people in my life. And I've had to navigate saying, you know, it's cool if I'm cool with dying to people who really don't want to hear that. And kind of realizing, okay, my experience of whether I'm dying or not is just going to be completely different from someone else. And in a way, I kind of stopped talking that way around other people. But yeah, in terms of like what's happened in the city and people losing all their friends and stuff, I haven't actually had that experience. I did briefly work at the Zen Hospice, which was a very strong experience in my life. The first day I went in, and there was a dead body there. Somebody just died like 20 minutes before. But yeah, I don't feel like that's been a big part of what I've worked with. It's been more relating to my own death and other interacting with other people around that. But I'm sure that will come as well. Is there anything else you wanted to say about that?
I just want to thank you because there's, of course, this synchronous phenomenon. Everyone around me is falling apart. And so I've been really facing it. And it was really great to hear you talk about your own journey.
Yeah. And there was somebody, was it you or was it here? At you?
You said something, people talk about fighting the illness. And I think it's almost like it's a cultural trait. You're supposed to, it's the war on cancer, it's
war
on AIDS, it's the war on drugs.
And yeah.
The vocabulary eliminates other possibilities, and you're considered lazy or cowardly if you don't fight.
Yeah.
And when in fact there's a whole range of possibilities.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, I had a similar experience to you. I think I'm 63, and I seroconverted HIV about 6 years ago. And I used to be like a counselor for HIV negative guys, and used to talk about how. You know, and I was on one side and they were on the other side. And now all of a sudden I'm on that side.
Yep.
I switched roles and I told people around me, my close friends, gee, I got HIV. And they said, gee, that's so sad. Especially this time in your life that you would have gone through your whole adult life, and all of a sudden now you have this terrible thing. But my experience is that since I got HIV, my life has opened up. And I was on a journey, a sort of undefined journey before, and now all of a sudden I have people looking after me. I have doctors who are monitoring my health. I have support groups. In San Francisco, there's all kinds of... I'm part of a community. And it was something that I felt like it sort of was missing before. It's weird. And the way my life has really... I'm starting to look at things in my emotional life that I never took care of before. And now people are expecting me to take care of them. Like, how are you feeling? Are you feeling okay? And I'm like... Oh, nobody really ever asked me that before. I was just having to be brave before. I was having to battle on with my, as a healthy person. Now, I am entitled to talk about my feelings and make it stick. And I was talking to a friend after I got HIV, and he was saying, gee, you know, people like you with disabilities, it's so sad that society, you know, whatever, and I said, you're talking about people like me with disabilities? I say, you know, take me off your list.
Not part of that. That doesn't sound like a good list to be on.
I'm a lucky person.
Yeah.
And I feel like my life has blossomed in many ways since I got HIV.
Yeah.
And I feel healthier now than I felt before.
Me too. Thank you.
Okay.
One more?
One more.
Okay.
No, Silvana, thank you so much. This guys, this is our landlady.
Yeah, goddammit.
You may never afraid of your landlord. when we first were emailing and setting up this talk, you said you would speak about the preciousness of life. And I just want to thank you. You have done that. You're embodying an equanimity that is rare, and it's a real privilege to be with. And I'm sure I speak for everyone that we selfishly wish you years of robust health. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you all. You are lovely.
Okay. Thank you very much. Any announcements? Derek.
Again, Silvana, thank you very much for coming. And we will never let you die ugly.
We know, baby.
Amen on that.
We'll be right upstairs. Whenever you need any beauty tips. Next week, our speaker will be Alistair Shanks.
Yeah.
I just want to bring people's attention to the movie that opened a couple of days ago, Samsara.
Mm.
I saw it last night. It's the same vein as Baraka, a year old film, same people, Koya Nascazi, and it's just gorgeous photography.
Yeah, I second that.
Yeah, I'm the host today. There's a little food out there on the table, help yourselves. And we'll be passing around, I'm Pastor Donoval, and in gratitude, we suggest $5 to $8. And there's a sign-up sheet on the credenza if you care to get on the list, membership list, and make sure that you clean out your dishes, soapy water, get that before you leave. And then some of us meet at 12:30 and have lunch after the social.
Just a personal announcement. I actually have the opportunity to move out of David City, which I'm thrilled about. And I am looking for a room to rent. So if anybody knows of anybody who's renting a room,
Thank you. Thank you. I'd like to re-welcome our visitors, first-time people, David and Eddie.
Yes.
Hopefully they'll stay and join us after for refreshments. And we'll now close with a dedication of merit. By the power and truth of this practice, may all beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all be free from sorrow and the causes of sorrow. May all never be separated from the sacred happiness which is without sorrow, and may all live in equanimity, without too much attachment or too much aversion, believing in the equality of all that lives.
Thank you for listening to the Gay Buddhist Forum. If you would like to hear several new talks per month and be notified of upcoming speakers so you can participate live, please subscribe to this podcast, like us on Facebook, and join our mailing list by visiting gaybuddhist.org.